You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being here. On Wednesday, Hunter Juracek spoke to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club in Springdale. At the end, he and I had a Q&A session where we covered a lot of different topics. We talked about NIL, the future of games at War Memorial Stadium, why games like this weekend's in Arlington, the Southwest Classic, have fallen out of favor with the administrations at Arkansas and Texas A&M, Juracek's appointment to the College Football Playoff Committee, and much more. Today's podcast will be a little bit different. We're just going to play that Q&A between myself and Hunter Juracek from Wednesday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club.
You were in the Touchdown Club last week. You made some comments that I think made a headline about NIL, Arkansas Edge.
Sure.
And then I think I saw last week you said something like 300 new members have joined. I've seen that this looks new to me. You've got a $10 initiative to join the Edge program now. I haven't seen that before. Just kind of take us through the last couple of weeks from an NIL perspective. And do you? It feels like to me your words were – heard, and maybe there was some action taken.
Yeah, and, you know, I was asked a question about NIL and what I thought about it as an athletic director, and I think if you have followed me for 7 years, I'm nothing but honest, and when you ask me a question how I feel about NIL, I think I responded it was awful, and it is awful. But as the athletic director at the University of Arkansas, it doesn't mean that I don't embrace NIL, because that is not, we're not putting that genie back in the bottle. It is here to stay. But it is a reoccurring, and let's call it what it is, a reoccurring fund on an annual basis, because we have a football team every year, we have a basketball team every year, we have a baseball program every year, and we've had some incredibly generous people that have given significant six- and seven-figure gifts. But I've had to go to those same people for three consecutive years and ask for those six- and seven-figure gifts. And what we're trying to do is have a more grassroots campaign across the state of Arkansas that where we can have some reoccurring income into our collective Arkansas Edge. And so I try to dumb it down for me more than anything, but, you know, to come up with there's 1.1 million households in the state of Arkansas, and so if 10,000 of those households on average could give us $100 a month, we'd be in really good position in the SEC from a football program standpoint to compete at the highest level in this conference. And so if you can give $100, great. If you can give $10, great. If you can't give anything, we appreciate your support as a fan. And so I didn't want to offend anybody by asking for $100 a month. We do have a $10 a month option. We've had the remarks have spurred some more interest in Arkansas Edge. And it is for football. It is for men's basketball. It is for women's basketball. It is for baseball. It is for softball. We have 19 sports programs, and we have NLI opportunities for all of our student athletes. But obviously, football, men's basketball, and baseball are incredibly important to us at the University of Arkansas, because they're our revenue sports that produce the revenue that provide the fuel for our other sports.
You said, what was it, 10,000 households at $100 a month?
Yes.
So you flip that around, if my math is right, that's 100,000 households at $10 a month could do this. The point I think you're trying to make, though, is that it's going to take a real strong, like you said, a grassroots effort. You mentioned Ole Miss last week when you were at the Touchdown Club, and what I think Ole Miss has done well is that they have that grassroots effort, and that's allowed them to be competitive with what I kind of refer to as the large market teams.
Yeah, I think they started out from a grassroots standpoint with their Grove Collective, and out of the gate now they have some reoccurring monthly income that they can depend on. You know, we've been ahead of the NIL game at the University of Arkansas. July of 2021, we had our flagship entity that was our NIL entity that we partnered with the Walton College of Business, and really our student athletes got out to a great start with legitimate NIL agreements where they generated about $2.5 million from companies across the state of Arkansas. And then the collectives came, and we had our first collective under the umbrella of the Razorback Foundation. And then the NCAA and the IRS gave us some guidance where we had to pivot mid-season and launch Arkansas Edge roughly in January. And so we were behind, Arkansas Edge was behind, and we finally got some solid footing as we sit here in late September. But NIL's not going away. It's going to be a recurring expense need if we're going to continue to have a successful athletic program.
Did the collective surprise you? Was Arkansas behind in any way in terms of launching that first collective?
The collectives did surprise us because I've said this many, many times. In college athletics, we are our own worst enemy. We can find a loophole to any guidance or legislation there is out there. And the collectives were a loophole around NIL where student athletes didn't necessarily have to go out and earn that based on truly their name, image, and likeness. Let's call it what it is. It's pay for play now.
There's a story, an NIL story in the news today. I'm not going to ask you about that story in particular, about the UNLV quarterback. But you know, the story basically says that he was offered a certain amount of money, wasn't paid it, he's not playing anymore. Does this happen a lot? Is this something that the coaches are having to navigate? Like I think about Mike Gundy before Arkansas went over there. He had that conference and he said, hey, players, you need to tell your agents that negotiating season is over. They can call us in December. I mean, how much are coaches and you all in the administrative side dealing with these kinds of issues on a daily, weekly basis?
I would say it is we have contracts with each of our student athletes through Arkansas Edge, and so they will enter into an agreements, and so a student athlete will know when their season is starting exactly what they're going to make, that's a contract, and we're not renegotiating those during the course of the year. I can't speak for other collectives and other institutions, but I don't believe our coaches deal with that a great deal during the course of the season at the University of Arkansas.
So you mentioned contracts with the collective. Is there anything that protects the team, though, from, like, say, in the NFL, if somebody quits mid-season, there's going to be something contractually that's going to be required of them, you know, to break their contract. To breach it, is there anything that protects the schools from a player just saying, "Hey, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore"?
I mean, obviously, you'll stop paying. The collective will stop paying that student athlete their NIL money. But really, there's no protection for that. There's not strong enough language in any of these agreements currently, because if you put that language in there strong enough, then it's probably going to be a deterrent for the student athlete coming to your institution or remaining at your institution.
Revenue share is coming. We don't know when. Might be here by July, August of next year, might take longer. How does that change the financial component for the players? And I think maybe there's a little bit of a misconception that NIL might go away, but from everything I've heard and read, it seems like it might only become, you know, more of an influence, something, you know, that can be a companion piece to the revenue share.
Yeah, so let me break NIL down into three different pieces of pie. There's legitimate NIL, which is if you have a value to your name, image, and likeness, whether you're a student athlete or a person walking around in society and a business product or service wants to pay you for your name, image, and likeness to market their business product or service, you can receive compensation for that. That's the positive of NIL that started on July 1 of 2021. Then you have the collective piece where donors pool their resources. In our instance, it's Arkansas Edge, and they enter into agreements with student athletes to retain them, pay them when they come to your institution, and they do some charitable work, whether that's sending out tweets on behalf of a charitable organization, making appearances on behalf of that charitable organization, signing balls, whatever the case may be. And then what you're talking about, then the third component is revenue sharing. So July 1 of 2025, if the House settlement is approved, we can take roughly, there's a massive formula for all 70 Power Four schools, but it's going to be about $22 million that we can share from our Department of Athletics revenue that can go straight to student athletes. We haven't been able to share any internal revenue to this day. And so our hope is that internal revenue sharing will take the place of the collectives. It will never take the place of regular NIL. That will always still be there. We've got to get rid of this middle section, the collectives, okay? Revenue sharing, if we could, we would all agree to that, and we'll all agree to general NIL. It's the collective piece in the middle that has to go away. If it never goes away, it's going to be the same teams that you see right now ranked in the top 10 that will consistently be ranked in the top 10. It's not going to change.
Do you think it goes away?
It's going to take some really strong presidents and chancellors and athletic directors to hold their coaches accountable to that going away.
So there's another piece to this, which, and I don't know how into the weeds we can get about this, but the potential for more scholarships, you know, to the athletes, that I think I've heard you say is what, probably another 3 to 5 million, maybe a little bit more, that would be added. So as part of this whole revenue share agreement, you're looking at somewhere in the $25, $30 million in increased expenses next year?
Yeah. Well, you've got the revenue sharing is one element, and then the back settlement of $2.8 billion that will go to student athletes from 2016 to 2021. That was when the suit was filed, and then when the suit was finally settled to allow for NIL. There's $2.8 billion. The plaintiff's attorneys, out of the goodness of their heart, are going to take $500 million off the top. And so then we'll share 2.3, and you can write that, Tom, if you want to, okay? Then they'll share 2.3 with the student athletes, and that'll be divided amongst football, basketball, and baseball players. As part of this settlement is the scholarship limits that exist today in college athletics were deemed to be an antitrust violation, and scholarship limits have gone away. The greatest example of scholarship limits is Coach Van Horn currently has 11.7 scholarships that he can allocate to 27 players on a 35-man roster. Okay? That goes away. But his roster is going to be reduced to 34. Now, I can allocate him 34 scholarships, or I can allocate him 25 scholarships. That has yet to be determined. Football's roster is going to be capped at 105. That means football could have 105 scholarships, but they're going to have 20 to 25 less opportunities for young men to play football. That is a walk-on program. There still may be walk-ons because we may only allocate 85 scholarships at Arkansas and have 20 walk-ons to get that 105. Some may go all the way to 105. That's still yet to be determined, and that will be most likely be institution to institution.
You said at the Board of Trustees meeting last week or last month, you said that you have to, quote, find levers to increase revenue and decrease expenses. How do you do that?
Well, we've got a budget committee right now that's broken up into seven different subcommittees. It's really examining how we spend our resources within the Department of Athletics. We're looking at every personnel position. If someone leaves a position, is it vital that we replace that position, or can we take that person's duties and divvy it up amongst two or three other people, give them a slight salary increase, and then still have a cost savings? We're looking at medical care expenses. We're looking at food expenses, how we travel, how we schedule, which will dictate how we travel, as one of those levers to reduce expenses. And then, you know, there's not any revenue stone that's left unturned. We're having a concert this weekend in Bud Walton Arena. That is a concert that will revenue from that will go back to the athletic department. We had one that was great a few years ago in Garth Brooks. So we're looking at different things like that that can generate more revenue above and beyond ticket sales, sponsorship sales, television revenue, et cetera, for our department. And so those are the levers I'm talking about.
We'll get back more to some financial stuff. I want to keep everybody engaged here. We'll talk about some fun stuff.
They're not engaged?
They look sleepy. Football. This weekend with A&M, why do you think the A&M series, I know you weren't here when that contract was signed, but I think initially there was some excitement about playing down there every year, and then pretty quickly it fell out of favor. Why do you think it's fallen out of favor, and from an administrative standpoint, why is it important to you and A&M to get it back on campus?
Well, I think when it first started, if I have my history right, is it was a non-conference game.
That's right.
And then they became a member of the Southeastern Conference, and then it became a conference game. Mm-hmm. And you really don't want your conference games being played at neutral sites. You don't see many conference games. I think Georgia, Florida is an example of one that goes to a neutral site. That's a longstanding tradition, but you don't want your conference games being played at neutral sites. And I think Texas A&M is in agreement with that. I know Ross and I were, Trev is as well. And it's just important to have your conference games at your home stadiums.
We'll have more from Hunter Juracek at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club in just a moment. We want to tell you that our podcast is brought to you by Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. When we come back, more of our conversation with Hunter Juracek, but first a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, we appreciate you being with us. We'll get to our conversation with Hunter Yurecek here in just a second. First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Now back to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club and more of our Q&A with Arkansas Athletic Director Hunter Yurecek.
What have you thought about Bobby Petrino's influence on the football team this year?
Well, first and foremost, he's been great for Coach Pittman because he's been a great complement to him. I think what Sam missed last year a great deal was someone with head coaching experience sitting in the meeting rooms like he had in Barry Odom as his defensive coordinator for the first 3 years that he was at Arkansas. So Bobby's been a great complement, having sat in a head coaching chair that can help Sam work through some issues. But I think as you look at our offense and how our offense has progressed from this time last year to where we are today, it's night and day. We have established a running game. We've got a really good quarterback. We're trying to give him some better opportunities to complete some passes that aren't quite as difficult. He seems to make the difficult passes look easy, and the easy ones sometimes look difficult. But he's doing a great job. I mean, look at statistically where we are and where they rank. Running back, quarterback, receivers in the SEC, they all rank at the top of that. And I think that's the influence of Bobby Petrino. And he is an attention to detail guy. He's very demanding on those players. But I think they really enjoy playing for him.
It's no secret that the public opinion about Sam was not high at the end of last year. What do you think it says about his personality that he's able to go out, because you've said this was his hire, to hire Petrino, and hire a coach who he probably knew was going to have a higher popularity than he does?
I think he's very comfortable in who he is. And if you know Sam Pittman. He doesn't try to be someone he's not. And I think he knew that was the best offensive coordinator that he could hire for the football program here at the University of Arkansas. And it was indeed his hire. And I asked him, I said, this is something that you're going to hire. I've never get involved in hiring of assistant coaches for any of our sports programs, nor letting them go. That is our head coach's responsibility. And so he came to me. I helped facilitate that with the chancellor and the president in the board, but it was 100% his hire.
You have said, I think before the season, you said that you thought the leadership within the locker room was a lot better this year. I think you may have alluded to the fact that you didn't think it was that case last year. Do you feel like that's shown in the first month?
I think absolutely. I think when you look at just getting down 17-3 in that UAB game, I don't think if you have strong leadership on your sidelines on both sides of the ball that you come back from in that game. I think, you know, we learned from that. I think we learned from the Oklahoma State game for the Auburn game, and that's because of leadership. And when we lost that Oklahoma State game, you could see it on the players' faces in that locker room. They knew that was not a game that we should have lost. We played well enough to win. Sometimes that doesn't happen. You can play well enough to win and don't win. But I think that all goes back to the leadership in the locker room.
Would you say they would win that game 9 out of 9 times if they played it again?
That's a tough place to play as well. But I would say that if you have almost 700 yards of total offense, you know, you're going to win that game more times than not.
You mentioned soccer being ranked number one. How cool has it been to see the ascent of that program?
It's been awesome. It's been awesome to work with Coach Hale and help him build the vision that he had for that soccer program. And, you know, we've tried to support him in all of our sports and doing a little something every year. 5 years ago, we redid that building in the end zone, redid their locker room, their training room, their team room. We put chair backs in the stadium. We put a new turf down the year before last. This year, we put a new video board and sound system. And so we continue to try to give him the tools to build his program. And he's one of the best coaches I've seen at just being incredibly transparent in the recruiting process and recruiting student athletes that fit who he is as a coach. He is a very tough, very demanding coach, and he recruits very tough, demanding young women to be a part of his program that understand that from the start. I mean, he has an interesting Zoom call with the student athlete and their parents because he wants mom and dad to hear the exact same thing as the prospective student athlete hears on that recruiting call. He will tell you, I'm not here to be a father figure. I'm not here to be your best friend. I'm here to be your soccer coach and make you a better soccer player first and foremost. And that's what they get from him. And he recruits really tough girls. Like I say, like if I'm going to war with any of our teams, soccer is going to be at the top of the list.
You and I talked a couple of years ago about soccer potentially getting some renovations to the stadium. I think softball was part of that conversation. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Bud Walton Arena, what might happen there. Where are you in this, like with each of those facilities? What phase are you at? And has NIL tabled any of that?
So I'll answer your last question first. Yes. And so we have a fully designed softball facility, a fully designed soccer facility. These are team-related operations facilities, similar to what we did with the JB and John Hill Development Center at baseball. And but we have to fundraise for those projects. We were going to take both of those projects out of reserves. Now we need to hold on to our reserves based on what's happened with revenue sharing. And so those projects are on the side burner, not the back burner. We're trying to raise money for both of those projects. Bud Walton, we've had two things that happened. So we hired an architectural team for Bud Walton for their expertise in arena renovations. And they were humming right along. And then in early January, they called and they left to go to a competitive firm. Okay? So that really put us in a little bit of a bind because we specifically hired them for their expertise in arena renovation. But it was a little bit of a blessing in disguise because we've kind of finished the first phase of that. We know what we can get for what price right now, but we need to let this NIL and the revenue sharing piece really settle down. And so that's a project that has been put on the side burner, not the back burner. There's a renovation that's needed to that facility, just a lot of deferred maintenance that's going to have to happen in the next 3, 4 to 5 years. But we need to let this NIL piece settle. I can't take on more debt service within our Department of Athletics budget. And so the arena renovation will happen at some point in time in the future, but is not as imminent as we had once thought.
Is it premature to say a timeline on when this happens?
It is very premature to say a timeline, yes.
But several years.
Not several years, because we're going to have to replace the roof. We're going to have to replace the court. We're going to have to replace some of the infrastructure pieces and the HVACs and plumbing and electrical systems. So there's some things we're going to have to do soon.
You're talking about the critical maintenance. It's going to happen soon. But the arena overhaul, is that?
Well, you don't want to do one without the other. So, you know, we've approached this with an A and a B scenario. A is just going in and doing the deferred maintenance, which is somewhere in a neighborhood of, we think, a $50 to $60 million project. And then there's a complete renovation, which is closer to $125 to $150 million project. Keep in mind that Bud Walton was built for about $30 million 32 years ago.
You've got a new basketball coach, I've heard, John Calipari. What's it been like working with him, number one? And as you've gone around the state the last 5 months or so, what's the reaction been like to hiring him?
Well, I'll talk about the reaction first. It was, I think, a definitive point of pride for people across our state to lift their head up high and poke their chest out that someone like John Calipari would come to the University of Arkansas and coach our men's basketball team. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach with 850-plus wins. He's been to multiple Final Fours, won a national championship, coach in the NBA. He's got quite the pedigree in the resume. I think for some, it's still weird to see him in a Razorback shirt and as opposed to that Kentucky blue, because I think he was you know, as he said, I got the loudest boos I've ever gotten when I got kicked out of Bud Walton Arena 3 years ago. And so that, there's something, our fan base thought one thing of him back in 21-22, and they think totally different of him right now. But he's been incredible, incredible to work with. And that's what we've done is work with him. Somebody said, well, how do you manage Coach Cal? I don't manage Coach Cal. He knows how to run a basketball program. He's proven that inside out. What I'm doing for Coach Cal is trying to get all the obstacles out of the way and give him the tools to be successful as a head basketball coach. I would be a fool as your director of athletics to hire someone like Coach Cal and not give him the resources and the tools that he needs to take us back to the Final Four at the University of Arkansas. So that's my job. I'm not managing him. He doesn't need to be managed. He's got it. He understands his program. I'm just trying to give him everything he needs to be successful.
We mentioned the Southwest Classics going away. Now a decision is going to have to be made on War Memorial. I mean, which way is the wind blowing there?
Well, the wind's blowing is we have one more game on our schedule next year against Arkansas State. That'll be the first time we've played Arkansas State. And then currently we don't have any games officially scheduled in the future at War Memorial Stadium. Doesn't mean we can't take a game and schedule it over there. But, you know, we've gone a couple of years in the last 5 years, COVID and a year or two after that, we haven't played at War Memorial Stadium and nothing detrimental happened to the people in Little Rock. It's been a great place to play games. But the winds of college football are changing. I mean, just like you talked about, the Southwest Classic is going away. We may go to a 9-game schedule in the SEC. We may stay at an 8-game schedule. And so as college football continues to evolve and change, we'll continue to need to evolve and change as a program. And that may include what we do at War Memorial Stadium in the future.
Is that included in your thoughts about increasing revenue, decreasing expenses playing down there? Because I mean, you make more revenue when you play games in Fayetteville.
Absolutely. If we had a sold-out game at War Memorial Stadium and a sold-out game here in Fayetteville, there's a seven-figure difference in what that revenue is.
About Razorback Stadium naming rights, where are we at with those?
Again, something that we're not in a rush. We want to get that right. And the revenue from that, the money we derive from those donations, are going to go to pay for the renovation to Bud Walton Arena, because we really don't need another renovation to the football stadium right now. And so as we put the renovation to Bud Walton Arena on the side burner, we kind of put that on the side. There's nothing, even though it's expired, it's nothing since we have to go and pull that name off, you know, July 1 of this year. So it's still Reynolds Razorback Stadium, and it will be until we find another naming rights partner for that.
I want to ask you about the college football playoff selection committee that you're on. How did that come about? I mean, how do you get approached to be on something like that? And how does that affect – how do you approach that this fall?
Well, I mean, that's a nomination from Commissioner Sankey to the CFP Executive Committee, and then that's approved. And it's an honor as an athletic director to get appointed to that committee. I think there's only been 45 to 50 committee members so far. How I approach that this fall is they give you an iPad on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. I have access to every college football game on that iPad. You can get the coaches cut. You can get the television cut. I can sit and watch a television cut of a game in about an hour now. And so I have to tell Jennifer now, I got to sit here and watch these college football games on a Saturday, right? So I've got my YouTube TV up. I've got four games on a screen, and I've got one on my iPad, and I'm just watching football. And right now you're really just at a point where you're just watching football, watching teams play. We don't have our first ranking till the first weekend of November. And so a lot will shake out between now and then, and then you'll really start to dial in and focus on about 35 to 40 teams when you get to that point.
If a team that you're affiliated with is discussed, you have to remove yourself from the conversation. It's not just Arkansas for you this year. It's South Carolina, too.
South Carolina and SMU. I have more recusals than anyone in the history of the committee, because my oldest son, Ryan, coaches at South Carolina, and then my middle son, Jake, works at SMU in their athletic department. And so I can't talk about – I can't be in the room for Arkansas, South Carolina, or SMU. And I can't vote for if they're in the pods that are being voted on at the time.
So how does that work? I know you haven't been in that situation yet, but do you just go hang out in the lobby of the Gaylord?
Yeah, they have a great lobby. They got great food. They got unbelievable candy table. And so if you get recused, it's not a bad thing.
Now, Kevin was telling me that you've pulled yourself out of the football oversight committee that you were on in order to be on this playoff committee. But what role did you have in this year's rule changes? You know, the iPads on sideline, the helmet communication, the two-minute warning, these things that we've seen that are new in the last month.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the last things that I was a part of as a member of the Football Oversight Committee, was the discussion and voting on the technology changes on the sidelines. I think the iPads are really good and effective. I think the jury's still out on the helmet-to-helmet communication. You only have to the quarterback and the linebacker, and that sounds like, well, that's what they do in the NFL, but most NFL teams huddle. And so what you were trying to avoid is having to signal in signals from the sidelines to your running back, your receiver, your quarterback, your lineman. And really, you've avoided some of that, but there's still a lot of signaling that goes on a college football field because you don't huddle very much in college football. And so I don't know that it's really going to accomplish what we set out to accomplish. If you watch the sidelines, there's still guys in multicolored shirts that are signaling. Some of them are fake signals. Some of them are real signals. And, you know, I guess the people at Michigan only know which ones are right.
Last one for you.
You can't write that, Tom, by the way. Okay.
Last one.
That was just for this room.
We got a camera going back there, by the way. Maybe a little bit premature. But, you know, you're not going to play A&M every year anymore at some point. You're not going to play LSU every year. You will play Missouri every year. What happens to the trophies when the games aren't played every year?
Well, I hope the last time they played before they're not played, we've won them, and then we're going to put them in a trophy case for 2 years at a time and hold on to them. And so, you know, whatever school right now that wins those games retains those trophies. And so if you go 2 years in between playing, hopefully we've won, and those trophies are sitting in our trophy case in the Smith Center.
But you think they'll keep playing for the trophy?
I can't speak to the Southwest Classic Trophy because I think that's something that the Cotton Bowl and the Joneses started, and so we haven't approached them about what they want to do with that trophy, if that game will still exist when it comes back to campuses. But I think the Battle Line Trophy, the Battle for the Boot, I don't see why those would go away.
Okay. Well, Hunter, we appreciate you being here.
And my pleasure.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate you joining us today on our podcast. Tomorrow we'll be back with our normal format. Ethan Westerman will be with me as we look ahead to Arkansas and Texas A&M. We also will have Roddy Jones, the ESPN analyst, who called the Razorbacks game against Auburn last week to tell us what he thought about the Razorbacks seeing them in person for the first time this year. If you enjoyed the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, hope you'll join us for one of our upcoming luncheons. We've got a full slate scheduled in October. It begins October 3rd with Matt Zimmerman from the Razorback Foundation, also the color analyst for the Razorback basketball broadcast. On October 17th, Kyle May, who's the executive director of the Arkansas Edge NIL, will join us. October 24th, Peyton Hillis, the Razorback running back. Looking forward to talking to him about his career, also that heroic save of his family last year in the Gulf. And we'll wrap up October on October 31st, Halloween, with Mike Neighbors at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. If you want to attend, all of our luncheons are at noon at the Home 2 Suites in Springdale, and you can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. We hope that we'll see you next time at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Until tomorrow, hope we'll see you at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everyone.